Hi, this is Favi Fav. And that's it, because Bavelito's on a break. It's just me, and we're supposed to go back to this every other week format in July, but you know, I can't quit y'all, okay? So I'm going to re-air an episode today. It's a rebroadcast of our classic Latinos Who Lunch episode, Not My Monument, where we reacted to the movement of taking down these Confederate statues and symbols throughout the nation that started after the white supremacist slash neo-Nazi slash terrorist rally that happened in Charlottesville in 2017. And so that podcast, even though it was 3 years ago, is so relevant right now. We talk about symbols of the Confederacy. We talk about the monuments that we are allowed to have as Latinos, as people of color. And we also talk about Hey Reb, the Confederate mascot at UNLV, which has since, you know, evolved to a mountain man or a frontiersman, which it's not much better than a Confederate soldier. It's still a symbol of manifest destiny. And I know people are arguing about that still. Get over yourselves, people. Just stop. It's not great. And so there's been a lot of updates recently with what's been going on right now with the Black Lives Matter movement. And also, I'm a little bit more politically active and have tried my best to, you know, be a member of the community here in Las Vegas that is trying to change institutional racism and white supremacy where I can. So as many of you know that are on our Patreon, I talked about in detail about the Neon Museum and the open letter that I wrote to them last week. And so if you don't know, just a brief recap. Much like every other cultural institution in Las Vegas, not everyone, a few of them did speak out, but like most of them tried to remain very neutral and not upset anybody. And so most places are not just stating Black Lives Matter, right? They're not with the movement. They don't understand what's happening right now. And the Neon Museum is one of those places. And so they rolled out their Black History stuff, and they thought that was enough. They posted something that I thought was going to be a Black Lives Matter statement, but it was kind of a fake out. I know that that was not their intention. I'm not blaming them for that, but it was just a little tone deaf. Like, hey, if you're going to post a black square that turns into a video about something else, like, come on, wake up, people. Like, you're not aware of what's happening in the world. So this upsets me because the Neon Museum is in a predominantly black neighborhood and is a symbol of not only, you know, history and culture, but it's also a symbol of violent gentrification that happens in many cities. And the people that are in those neighborhoods that are affected by an institution like that are never thought about. The programming at the museum never reflects the neighborhood that they're in. And they don't have to do that, you know, but if you are a nonprofit organization that claims to care about the history of Las Vegas through storytelling, through the signage, and you're in a predominantly black neighborhood, and in your mission statement, it says that you're there to serve, you know, the community and help the arts, ignoring those people is just such a slap in the face to everyone. So that's why I was upset. And then what really kind of took it over the edge was one of my friends posted just the comment, Black Lives Matter on their Instagram, and she was silenced. Her comment was restricted. And so that's when I decided to do something about it. I posted these like funny boardroom stock photo things. You can see them in my highlights. If you go, it's the first highlight on my Instagram if you want to see it. I'm trying to be as transparent as possible so that they can't say I'm being shady, even though I want to be. So from there, a lot of concerned people in the community reached out and helped me with this open letter. So you can go to change.org and look for an open letter to the Neon Museum. I'll link it in the episode guide so you can go there. I urge you, please, 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 as a Latinos for Lunch listener, to read it and please consider it, signing it in support, because I know we've talked about the Neon Museum and given it glowing, glowing reviews here on the podcast, but enough is enough. I'm not going to pretend that things are okay anymore. And you know what? Like, I worked there for 6-7 years, and I was also part of the problem when I was there because I didn't speak up. And silence is complicity, you know? So it's time to start doing things and shaking things up and letting people know that what they're doing is wrong, and it's hurting a community, it's hurting people. And so it started that way. And then the more information I got, the more I realized that the employees at the Neon Museum were also not being treated very well. So now that is my mission, is to help all the employees at the Neon Museum that feel like they have no voice, that they feel like, you know, they've been marginalized and silenced also all these years. It's time for them to actually feel like humans and appreciated. And if the directors and the Neon Museum board think that their employees are fine, well, wake up, because we all know what's happening. Las Vegas is a very small town, and we all talk, and we've all known for a very long time that it's just not a great work environment. And so, anyway, I'm trying, and I'm trying to do my best to be an active, positive community member here in Las Vegas, and I'm putting my money where my mouth is. We talk about activism all the time here on the show. We talk about doing the right thing. And this is one thing that I could do, you know, taking all my experience from meeting you guys, all the listeners, all my friends that are really doing amazing work across the country. I learn from you. I learn from them. And thank you to everybody here on the ground in Las Vegas that has also helped me. So I'm trying to make sure that something actually happens this time and things aren't just swept under the rug like they are time and time and time again here in Las Vegas. So Neon Museum, wake the fuck up. And this is also a wake-up call to every other cultural institution. I'm looking at you, Smith Center. I'm looking at you, Children's Museum. I'm looking at you, you know, the list can go on and on and on. I'm looking at you, UNLV, right? So in this episode, we talk about Hey Reb, the mascot at UNLV. I think I call it Running Rebels, which is the basketball team, but it's actually Hey Reb. And Hey Reb started as a Confederate soldier. Now he's a frontiersman. Recently, the statue of Hey Reb that was cast in bronze and set outside of the Alumni Center was taken down, so there's some progress, but I also want to just start talking about how we can get rid of that symbol of the Confederacy and white supremacy as the mascot, period. If you want to learn a little bit more about that, I just interviewed the amazing artist and activist Fawn Douglas. She is an enrolled member of the Las Vegas Paiute tribe, and her work is about her identity and activism, and she deals with it in a multidisciplinary way and with humor. And it was a great conversation if you want to learn a little bit more about that and what you could do to help with that movement. So I've already talked for way too long, so I'm going to start this episode. But remember to follow us and review us. Thank you for everybody that's left a review. We got to 1,000 reviews on Apple Podcasts. Keep sharing this podcast with your friends. And we'll be back next week with Pavelito to add to the conversation that we started 3 years ago about the same shit that is happening today. Okay, enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Bobby Fav.
And this is Pavelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch.
the podcast where we talk about important things like
my daddy Pennsylvania, mama from Pennsylvania, you mix a pencil with the vania, I'm from Pennsylvania.
Hello, hello, hello.
Good show.
How are you, Babelito?
I am very satisfied and happy and panza llena, corazón contento.
Are you nourished?
I am nourished.
She is nourished and she deserves.
Shout out, Ramiro.
Shout out to Ramiro. But how are you? What did you eat? What are you talking about?
I had pho thanks to you.
You're welcome.
I had chicken pho. Did I tell you about my sister trying to read that book in kindergarten?
¿Cómo? ¿Cuál?
Because she's from Chihuahua, right? So and she's now a kindergarten teacher, first grade. I remember. She's gonna listen to this and kill me.
She's a first grade teacher. I know that.
No, pero ya la pusieron en kindergarten with babies. Anyway, so she had to read a book about chips on a ship.
What?
About sheeps like me on a
sheep.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's plural without the S.
Okay.
Sheep on a ship.
Aha. Uh-huh. But she's from Chihuahua.
But she's from Chihuahua.
So she couldn't do it.
Wait.
She kept saying, sheep from a ship.
Okay.
Anyway, so I had chicken pho.
Uh-huh.
And some beautiful rolls. What do you have?
I had a vegan pho, actually.
Look at you and your vegan
food. I'm living my privileged fantasy, bitch. I'm eating vegan pho. I know. Can you believe it?
I can't.
I know.
When we went to In-N-Out on our way back from LA and you ordered that carb-free burger.
Yeah.
I was shooketh.
Stop saying that. Nobody fucking says that anymore.
I'm going to continue
Christine
to say
is
it.
Christine is dead to me, okay? She was in that fucking Katy Perry video. She's dead. Mourn her.
Yeah.
So, what were you talking about? I had a protein style because sometimes you just want it fresh. You just want a crunchy lettuce wrap around an In-N-Out burger. What's wrong with that?
Mentiras. I can never do that. No, I know what you're saying. I'm starting tomorrow.
I didn't know we were going to drive and eat, though, because that's not the best thing to do.
Okay. So one of the things that we wanted to do is to talk about this. But first of all, we want to remind everybody that we have a list of podcasts that talked about this specific topic when it first started.
Yeah.
This is an event that occurred in August 12. So, I mean, it's not going to get old to talk about this because we have to mention. But one of the things that we decided to do that we're going to guide you towards those podcasts, but also we're going to talk on a specific aspect about what happened in Charlottesville, because everything started because there were white supremacists manifesting their anger against people wanted to take down this monument, a Confederate monument.
Yeah.
And this idea of monuments and what they represent and the history, it's a conversation that, in a way, academia has been having for a long time, but now it's mainstream. And now it's more important than ever. So I was talking, Fabi and I were talking about it. We're like, let's talk about the monuments that matter to us, to our community. And because we're always talking about, the conversation is surrounding Confederate monuments.
Yeah.
But what about Cristóbal Colón, man? Like, what about Oñate in New Mexico? What about Hernán Cortés in Spain? I mean, there's so many things that we need to discuss. But before we start, I want to ask you, what do you think of a monument? When you think of a monument, what do you think? What is?
I mean, a standard monument is, of course, a bronze statue or some sort of stone sculpture of a dead white person holding a gun.
Sometimes
there's a water feature. Usually there's a plaque with rich white people's names under it,
mm-hmm.
because they funded the sculpture.
Correct.
But I know, because I'm an artist, that monuments are many different things.
Mm-hmm.
For example, art. Art can be considered a monument.
Correct.
In the art world, a monument to art history. There's a lot of monuments that are almost like anti-monuments, like the
Vietnam Memorial.
Vietnam Memorial by Maya Lin, for example, was really controversial when it came out.
Because it was almost like a rejection.
Yes, because it was very minimal. I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's a beautiful memorial. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was a... If you guys don't know what we're talking about, it's the one in Washington, D.C. that is black and it's reflective and it's a big wall, like an L shape, I think.
It's like black marble, no? It's made out of...
Yeah, it's polished stone. Uh-huh. And it has all the names of the people that died in Vietnam etched into it. And so you're reflected in that monument.
So there's like, it's a very interesting monument because, of course, it also reflects history, and history is very selective, just like all the monuments that are coming down all over the United States and hopefully all over the world. But it's very interesting that he melds this idea of reflection and history and memory, because all of those things are happening at the same time when you're looking at monuments. Like, it's supposed to tell you about not so much history, but the memory of that history.
Yeah, and a monument can also be architectural, right? Mm-hmm. Like when I came into Vegas last night and we drove past the Trump Tower, I got really angry because I realized that not only is that a hotel, Trump's hotel, but it's a monument to himself.
Correct.
And that's the reason he puts his names on all of his buildings. He's creating these monuments.
These monuments, absolutely.
For him and his legacy. And that's something that we should talk about too, is like, why have monuments? What are monuments for, right?
And as you're saying, monuments can be everything.
I'm asking you.
Well, monuments are to preserve memory, but a very selective memory. And when we talk about history, you know, RuPaul says even her story, like his story, like it's something that is very, very, very selective.
Yeah.
And we have to consider a lot of things. When are these monuments erected and by whom? It's just like when you look at art. When you look, one of the first things that we do in the art appreciation classes, for example, is not to just look at a piece of art just to look at it. You have to ask that question. Who paid for it?
Yeah.
Who commissioned it? For what reason? In what period? All of that will inform what it is. So
Truly. The
agency of the artist is, of course, important, but it's just one aspect of the whole entire thing. And the same thing with monuments. And even though when we think of monuments, as you say, we think of this like... rich, powerful, white dude on a horse on a pedestal in the middle of a plaza. It can be rocks. Think about Plymouth Rock. Uh-huh. That's an important one. There's one in Mexico, for example, which we'll talk about in a second, called El Árbol de la Noche Triste, that celebrates the conquest. That can be and also considered a natural monument. Architecture is one. The ruins of architecture, too, can also be considered monuments. So we're not going to limit the idea of the monument to just that, to just a statue.
And it can also be the absence of something.
Correct.
So, for example, Double Negative in the desert. Michael Heiser, who's a land artist, took away land and made these two big canyons that, to me, are a monument to his white privilege, because he was able to go onto like really old Native American territory in Nevada and just deface, I mean, just like carve pieces out of this mesa next to a river. And it was now that town of Overton, Nevada is known for him scratching into the wall. I mean, let's not even get into Mount Rushmore, but.
And it's not known for the natural resources that were not in consideration when that was made.
Yeah.
It's not known for the Native American legacy that is part of
it. Now it's called the Mormon Mesa because the Mormons colonized that area.
Que la chingada.
Yeah. I mean, before...
Cuando no es uno, es el otro.
Sí, sí, sí. Anyway.
Yes, but one thing that we have to keep in mind is that when these monuments come about. And for example, all these Confederate monuments, the first time that we see them is at the turn of the century, when you have all these white Southerners that were attempting to disenfranchise.
Like in the early 1900s?
Correct, black people. And then you have the second burst, which is, of course, in the 1960s during the civil rights movements. And when I was looking at the statistics and all the monuments, because there's hundreds of them, right? I mean, there's websites that are dedicated to that. I was thinking about the Chicano murals.
Right.
And when did they came about? They came about also, I mean, there's murals from all different periods, but most of them, for example, in Boyle Heights, in East LA, it's in the 60s, it's in the 70s, it's during the Chicano civil rights movements. Mm-hmm. And they're important. And with that in mind, I find those murals as the monuments to our communities.
Sure.
And what's interesting about it is that they're always being erased. They're always be, and we we're going to talk about this topic in the listener letters episode that is coming up. But there's murals that are being erased because of
yeah. But that's also the nature of a mural. Like mm-hmm. even if it's not a monumental mural, if it's just an aesthetic,
that it's supposed to go away.
It's supposed to go away.
But the thing that that interests me is how easy they can be erased.
Yeah.
A mural can be taken down, no question, because a new minimalist building is coming up. But a Confederate monument, like, we have to have people died for us to have that fucking discussion. Yeah. That is the irony about what's happening right now in the state. So with that in mind, can you think of any monuments or like some sort of historical figures that that are of interest of to the Latino community here in the States?
Here in the States?
Yeah, because we're talking about these oppressive monuments, but I was thinking, well, let's do an episode about our monuments or the monuments that are against us, for example.
Oh, I wish you would have asked me this before so I could have prepared. Thanks a lot.
No.
No, I mean, just, I mean, there's not a lot, right? Murals are really our monuments, like you're saying. And but when I think about, so I'm putting this in a different context. So mm-hmm. I'm in the art world, so I'm in a lot of art shows that are temporarily up. So that's almost what it feels like, is like we're allowed onto the facades of spaces, but only for a limited time. But I mean, there are some statues out there. Hello, the Selena statue. Here in Las Vegas, for example, we have a big Jimenez, Luis Jimenez sculpture.
Yes.
At the airport that, to me, always kind of symbolized the Latino presence in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's not a lot, you know?
There is not a lot. And we talked about it in the Las Vegas, Latinos in Las Vegas episode. We see those names like Trump.
Yeah.
But where are the names of all the communities that build those monuments to white people? You know what
right.
I mean? They are not present. But I was thinking about Christopher Columbus, for example. Because they yeah. are monuments of Christopher Columbus. And I went to this website. I just started clicking.
Uh-huh.
In the world, there's over 600 different monuments just to Christopher Columbus alone. Just to give you an idea that the legacy of his quote-unquote accomplishment of the encounter with the Americas, because I'm not going to call it discovery because he didn't discover shit.
Right.
It's celebrated over everything because, I mean, he celebrated over the fact that he basically begun a period of destruction of destruction of different forms of knowledge, religions, communities, and also killing people.
Yeah, but also, isn't it true that, I mean, the people that made him who Christopher Columbus were the people that wrote his history.
Mm-hmm.
Like they chose him to be like the main colonizer. But it really, I mean, Christopher Columbus was just like fucking up and just running into different islands. They didn't know what he was doing.
He was still part of an empire because
right.
the idea was to expand the empire. And he began a really dangerous history. When we think about how Europeans always see natives, this idea that there were monsters in the Americas, or
yeah.
he wrote letters, for example, where he said that he witnessed seeing people with tails, with dog tails, people with three.
He was just really high.
I think he was fucking high on fume. Yeah, he created the monstrosity of natives, and he created the monstrosity Ooh. Of the Americas around mm-hmm. the world, and that still is. It's a discussion that we have. We talked about it when we. When we talk about the news of how people still see places like Mexico as these dangerous, exotic places, that's something that Christopher Columbus started. But that's people don't talk about him for that. People talk about him because of his discoveries.
Oh, my God. A side note.
Dígame.
Okay. Shout out to the National Hispanic Cultural Center in Albuquerque and Tay, the director
yeah.
there. She does. I don't want to give too much information out because I think she's writing a book about this, but she's obsessed with the image of the sleeping Mexican.
Yes.
Right. And I didn't really know anything about it. I've always been attracted to that image, mm-hmm. like that symbol. You see it on in restaurants or the sculptures in the thrift stores, or you can buy them, you know, when you go buy yard ornaments, you know. But I didn't realize that the sleeping Mexican was actually an image put out by Mexico after the revolution so that we weren't seen as savages and we were seen as docile people.
Oh,
it
my
is
God.
So fascinating.
That is interesting.
So the border was the first to adopt that as a symbol of Mexico to try to get people over the border. So that's where you started seeing the little tchotchkes.
So like being passive is supposed to be aggressive.
Come to Mexico. We're passive here. We're not going to... I was going to make a bad joke. But...
<That's> stupid.
But... I think that's fascinating. You know what I mean? Like a non-threatening person of color, you know?
That is the fucking history of the world.
Yeah.
Trying to accommodate to the needs of the white man.
And on that note, that's why I think we don't see a lot of monuments of people of color, because anytime there is a monument with a person of color, it's seen as threatening, even in paintings, even on video art. If you ever see a person of color on that, it's always looked at as this person is a threatening person, right? And even if you look at the, for example, the Martin Luther King monument in Washington, D.C., like he is in the stone. Like,
yeah.
So a lot of people love that sculpture because his arms are crossed, which is also seen as confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it looks like he's stuck in the stone, which is supposed to, the stone is supposed
to reference. Like the opposite of freedom.
That he was as strong as a stone. And well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, you know the point.
No, but it's interesting because I find it fascinating, this romantic idea of the monument, especially the white monument made out of marble. But there's so many studies that have been done to like classical sculptures, because that's where it comes from Greek and Roman sculptures.
Yeah.
That those are all were painted. And when you look at them, they're so ugly, because they were with pigments and the skin was painted. But I think it is in the Renaissance where a lot of these monuments were being rescued. A lot of these statues were found, but the pigment was gone.
Yeah.
So this new fascination with the almighty white marble perfect statue started, and we still continue to work on. So when you mentioned the Martin Luther King monument, it reminds me of that. But that idea of always accommodating to the feelings, right? To the feelings of white Europeans, because that's how it started. That's why Columbus was doing what he's doing. He goes, there's freaking monsters everywhere in the Americas running wild. We gotta colonize them. Yeah. We gotta get rid of them. We gotta kill them. That give them like freedom for colonization. Again, that's like a whole entire history. Dangerous and very violent history that Columbus started, yet there's 600 monuments. Like, that is absolutely, I don't know, to me,
but I feel
crazy.
Like the jig has been up with Columbus for a long time. No, for real.
But he's
like,
still...
I know, like, on the East Coast, they still take the day off in some states, but us, we haven't celebrated Columbus Day since the 80s or something.
Oh my God, when we were in Mexico, we used to even sing songs during Christopher Columbus Day. It was called, I don't know if it's not anymore, El Día de la Raza. Because that's the day where all the los mestizos, you know, are created in the Americas. And there's one big statue. I don't remember. I think it was it was unveiled in 2016. It cost millions of dollars and is the highest statue of Christopher Columbus in Puerto Rico.
So
it's gigantic. And, you know, like Puerto Rico is going to this debt crisis, but yet the government spent all this money to talk about this European legacy of the of the island. It's so fucked up. So monuments matter. Monuments matter. And one of the things that Michael Taussig said, and Michael Taussig is this awesome anthropologist. He said that
Michael Taussig?
Taussig. T-A-U-S-S-I-G.
Okay.
Shout out Annette Rodriguez, who studied with him this summer. But there's some videos, and I'm going to post some links. But he talked about how monuments are invisible till they are defaced.
Let's talk about that. I find that fascinating.
Why?
Because it just clicks. It just clicked with me, okay? Because monuments to white supremacy are so common in our country that we don't see them until they're defaced. And this rings true on so many levels. For example,
dígame,
all of these white people that are upset now because when we make a comment and say these white supremacists are acting buck wild here, and we're like, that's nothing new, but I'm not a white supremacist. I'm not racist. I have 3 black friends, you know, like, okay, cool. Yeah. But you're still white, and we're still part of this white. We've all been brought up in this white supremacy. So just because you want to distance yourself from these white supremacists doesn't mean
you're not benefiting
from this privilege of being white. But then all these white people are now aware. I'm not even going to say hyper aware, but now they're aware that they're white because
and they don't know what to do with that.
They have no idea what to do.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my friend the other day and I said, hey, guess what, Mimi? I've known that I was a person of color since the day I like went to school, right? Since the day I walked into a grocery store and people followed me around, since the day that, you know, you're just always aware of your race as a person of color.
Absolutely.
You can't hide that. So now you're being confronted with your own whiteness and your white guilt. Cry me a fucking river. Leave me alone. I don't want to talk to you about it. Talk to white people that feel the same way that you do and figure it the fuck out, Mimi. It's not my job to help you work through your white guilt, okay? If you're going to pay me to do it, I'll take the money. What does a shrink cost? $100 an hour? Because I'm broke as fuck. And I don't need that emotional baggage that you have on me. I already have enough fucking baggage, okay? I'm overeating for all of us, okay? I'm doing my job, okay? So that's what I see. That's what I thought about immediately when you said a monument is not visible until it is defaced, right?
So the invisibility goes to hypervisibility.
Now it's hypervisible.
But
and you can call it alt-right. You can call it right wing nationalist, that's called white supremacy, and you can call them Nazis, because even calling them Nazis is kind of making them the other and making them more exotic, like they're from Germany or no,
which was the problem of the election
they're
to begin
white
with. They other themselves. Yes.
Yeah, don't other yourselves. Yes. They're here. And guess what?
Guess what, Mimi?
Guess what, Mimi? If you guys don't know what I'm referencing, it's from Untucked of RuPaul's Drag Race.
I'll put the link.
All-Star Season 1, where Mimi is attacked in the first episode. Anyways. Well, and Raven goes, well, guess what, Mimi? Here in Nevada, one of the people, one of those white dudes with a tiki torch,
maldito,
on the very front, goes to UNR. Here in the beautiful blue state of Nevada, my fucking cousin goes to that school. He probably walked by that dude. The butterfly effect, the butterface effect, that it affects everybody, right?
Yes,
like you're not immune to it just because you live in this fucking neoliberal neighborhood.
Absolutely.
And you're too good for it. No. No. Where the fuck is my sheet cake? I'm hungry. Anyway, what were you going to say?
No, what is interesting about that is that to begin with, that monument, the monuments were defaced. And to the people that defaced those monuments, it's never been invisible either. Like you, it's like you say, like you are aware of your color. You are aware of who you are all your life. So this supposed invisibility only exists on one side. So the people that for the people that deface those monuments, that has always been a present threat. And those monuments have never been invisible for the people that actually deface them. And with that in mind, like, there's so many different examples in history when it comes to the defacement of monuments. And one of the ones that it's like a known history in the Southwest, but not a lot of people know about it, is the history of a statue. I think it's in Española, of Oñate.
Oh, yes.
And Oñate, that son of a bitch.
Who is he?
Oñate was a conquistador.
Okay.
So he was a criminal that was one of the first Spanish to come to New Mexico. And when he came to New Mexico around 1599, he went into war with the different pueblos. One of the most recognizable wars that we can think of was with the pueblo of Acoma. If you have never been to Acoma, it is one of the most majestic places in this fucking country. Go visit Acoma. But anyway, so when he went to Acoma, he killed a lot of people. And the threat of native resistance was such after the war that he said, anybody, any young man, basically, I think he was under the age, like above the age 25 or something like that, cut their feet.
Oh my God.
So he cut the, le cortaron las patas a todos los del pueblo. In 19, I'm going to say, I think I was around the same age of the anniversary, the 500th anniversary of Oñate. There was a person that went into Española.
Yeah.
They went into this town. I need to check my facts. They went into this town and cut one of the legs of the foot of the statue. And somebody was paid to repair it, but you can still go and see the statue. Yes, it is in the visitor center northeast of Española. It was in 1998 where that happened. So it was like the 500th celebration, and he cut the foot. So that monument was super visible for the people that are managing, and they're still dealing with the consequences of that event, because it was not a war that happened 500 years ago.
Yeah.
It is a war that started a series of events that affect people today. And that's something that a lot of people tend to forget. So when you erect a statue of the enemy, it's going to be very visible. But again, it becomes an everyday thing for somebody. And if it didn't affect you, and it doesn't affect you all the time, then as we're saying, it's invisible. But this stuff is happening all the time. There's a statue in Spain of Hernán Cortés, and somebody threw blood in it.
Yes.
For that reason, because it's like, okay, yes, they celebrated in Spain, but again,
I know. And I mean, if you go back and listen to the episode, You Can't Erase Us, remember we talked about Lance, our friend Lance Smith, who is an African-American artist.
Mm-hmm.
And he, people were very upset because he painted black faces. He made murals with black people on them on a business that was owned by a white person. And he did not like that. So they painted over it. And them painting beige over those black faces
was a threat.
Was a threat. And
it was physically defaced.
Physically defaced, but it made it so visible that one of our county commissioners got into it. It got political. They paid him to repaint it. And guess what?
Guess what, Mimi?
There is now a Latino business where that guy's business was.
Yes!
They kicked his ass out. And now you can go rent TVs from Tio Pepe. So thank God.
So those are the little pockets of information that we need to hold to us,
mm-hmm.
because they give us hope. Because otherwise, when you start looking at everything, I was listening to a podcast, shout out Podcast de Colores, and they spent, I'm going to say 20 to 30 minutes just talking about the different events that happened this week.
Yeah.
From Charlottesville to Arpaio, that was pardoned in Arizona, to Tina Fey, everything. And I'm like, oh my God, like everything is fucking shit.
Yeah.
So we have to grab onto those sort of events. So the fact that the Congress decided that banning Chicano studies and Latin American studies in Arizona, it's fucking it's racist.
Yeah.
So just that little win, I think it gives people hope to continue to fight. I was thinking of another statue that got defaced. It was of J. Marion Sims, and he's always celebrated for his medical advances. But he found, like, there was a lot of discoveries that he did, but he used a lot of black bodies. He used a lot of black slaves and to do his medical studies, but without anesthesia, for example. So he basically murdered. He basically, I don't know, like, so much pain inflicted onto slave women. And but of course, he's always celebrated for his medical advances. And somebody went into the statue, which is in Central Park, and threw some blood on it. A remembrance of that. And with that in mind, the biggest question I think that people are asking is what to do with these monuments. And I wanted your opinion on that.
What do you think?
Because I've heard several things. One of them is to just get rid of them, melt the bronze and use it for something else, right? The second one is to preserve them in museums. And then you have the third one. I think it's somewhere in Germany and somewhere in Europe where they're using those monuments, taking them away from their power, taking them down from their pedestals and using them in parks and using them in gardens and all kinds of different things. Those are the three discussions that I've heard about what
taking
to do
them
with
them off of a pedestal and putting them in another location.
Yeah, like
so displacing the monument.
When I Google, for example, when you Google like monuments or defaced monuments, or you see all these monuments that are just like, it's actually beautiful because they're not on their pedestal, but they're falling next to the pedestal, or they're just laying down on the ground. So that is a reminder of why it was defaced, why it was destroyed. So that's one of the arguments, like we should preserve them, but in that condition. Now it's in a pedestal, now it's not. Now it's standing up on top of a horse. I mean, now let's get rid of it and just lay it on the ground.
Obviously, it's case by case. Like, we're not going to get rid of all the monuments in this country because it's going to be impossible to do that in certain areas.
And very expensive, too.
And very expensive, but it's case by case. And yeah, you know, there is place for these monuments in an exhibit, in a museum, because then it gives you context. Why was this thing taken down? What did this person represent? Mm-hmm. Usually what did this male represent, right? I mean, but I've been to Capitol Hill. I've been inside of ¿cómo se llama the fucking, not the White House, but the big one with the dome? Fuck.
Congress?
Yes, I've been in there. Uh-huh. And there's plenty of Robert E. Lee sculptures in there. There's plenty of Confederate sculptures in there.
And
they're already on full display.
And there's paintings of La Conquista de Mexico. Because the U.S. government wanted to attach their legacy to those Europeans.
Yes.
So for that reason, for the U.S. government, that's how they consider Mexico when it comes to the conquest, but not anything else.
So I know it sounds a little drastic, like, oh, my God, you're going to melt these things down.
But
I'm
like, chingada.
I'm pretty sure those things already exist in museums too.
Yeah.
So,
and there's a thing called libraries where if you want to learn this,
girl, nobody has time to read.
If you want to learn the story about the horrible things that these people did, like, you can learn it, you can study it, and you can learn from, like, we can learn from it. We don't need these monsters. And you know what I hate about this sort of monuments, because it continues this legacy of like the perfect European aesthetics of the perfect man with the perfect proportions on top of this perfect, very strong horse. And that is such an antique idea of beauty that I don't need a reminder of that every 5 minutes in my city.
Yeah.
So melt it. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. I mean, that's what I think. But a lot of people are fighting to be preserved in museums, but
I mean, like I said, it just depends.
Yeah.
But I want to get into something a little bit more personal.
Okay.
Because we both went to the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV, aka You Never Leave Las Vegas. And let's talk about the mascot, because there's so many offensive mascots out there. Let's not even start to talk about like the Native American cultures that are being appropriated and used all over the United States.
And everything in the names of cars, like Cherokee.
Oh,
and
my God. Don't even get me started.
Okay, okay.
That's a whole nother episode.
Yes.
But there are a lot of these Confederate monuments in schools because their mascots are still a representation of that time. For example, UNLV's Running Rebels. The Running Rebels is basically a Confederate rebel as our mascot.
And now, it's gone through all these stages, no? Okay.
Yeah, it used to be like this wolf that was like a sneaky wolf, like it almost looked like a Kara Walker like figure, you know? And if you look back at the history of running of Hey Reb, now he's not running anymore. Now he's Hey Reb, right? They keep shifting.
Yeah, because the Confederate mascot. Soldiers were known as rebels.
I know. But before he was running, now he's just going, "Hey." And it started as a wolf because UNLV came from UNR, right? So UNR is the North, and then we're the South. So that's why we're the rebels, right? So it was like, oh, like a cheeky thing, I think.
Even though Nevada became a state to get an extra vote to get rid of slavery.
Yeah, we were battle-born during the Civil War.
Hazme el favor.
Okay, but this is what happens when there's only white people in the government that think it's a funny joke. So then during the 90s, 80s and 90s, that's when UNLV was popping because the basketball team was really good.
Yeah.
That's what I read. I don't know. But that's what I saw on YouTube. I don't read. But guess what, Mimi? their mascot had a rifle next to him. He was like a blonde rebel with a big hat on, with a huge mustache. Yeah. And a shotgun, right? Or a rifle. Or I don't know what the fuck.
Hazme el pinche favor.
And then recently they changed him, right? Now he's like this big silver daddy that has like a big mustache, really big muscles. They got rid of the gun.
But like cartoonish. They made his face super, super big.
Uh-huh. And then he has like big old thighs and milky, milky skin. And he's just like standing there like, you know, don't fuck with me.
Y le quitaron la escopeta también, ¿no?
Y le quitaron la escopeta.
Yeah.
The one thing that does, so that does remain at UNLV. Who knows if they'll change the mascot. But shout out to Susie Newberry, who is one of the art history professors at UNLV. She was walking by the Hey Reb sculpture.
That's right.
That is cast in bronze and in the at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And it was the president and the provost and their assistants standing around the sculpture, like right after the Charlottesville terrorist attack happened.
The day after, yes.
The day after, that's right. And I'm calling it a terrorist attack because that's what it was. Is. Okay? And so, I don't know. I'm very interested to see what happens to that sculpture and to UNLV because I don't think the students support it. I mean, most of the students probably
don't
think
care. A lot of it is going to happen soon because they just rebranded the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you see the new symbol that it still includes the big ass mustache. Yeah. And even though they take away the obvious symbols of the Confederate Southern soldier, it's still this like explorer manifest destiny sort of dude that is supposed to be representing the school. I mean, regardless of no matter how you put it, it still needs to go away.
Yeah. Oh my God, I just got a great idea.
Dime.
Okay, so you know it's not Running Rebels, it's Hey Reb. Right? They just need to add one letter. Hey Reba. Reba McEntire. Oh my gosh. Somebody write this down. This is brilliant. Reba McEntire can be UNLV's mascot. Can you imagine?
No.
I'm a survivor. Fancy pants? Oh my God.
You know that show? I remember every time it was on.
The sitcom?
Yes.
I've watched every episode of that show.
I remember every time I saw it, I'm like, I feel dirty. I don't want to watch this. And then I will get glued to it. Mm. It was so bad.
No, it's not.
It was horrible. It was so bad.
Oh, really?
Pobrecita.
I really identified with the one lesbian daughter. What's her name?
Yes. Yeah. No acuerdo, pero it's sad that I know exactly what you're talking about.
Ay, Dios mío.
It's funny how many, like, the metamorphosis of that that sculpture. Like, he went through so many different stages and changes. Like, why not just get rid of it? We should have done that a long time ago.
Okay, so I actually know the artist who designed the new sculpture that's there because they were a grad student at UNLV. Mm-hmm. And originally, the bronze sculpture at UNLV, they made it more, like, cartoony. So it looks like a bobblehead instead of a real person, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't see that person's eyes. So it kind of dehumanizes it and makes it more of a caricature of a Confederate soldier.
But it's never a joke.
And the original sculpture also had a gun next to it. Mm-hmm. So the gun was taken away years ago. And what one of my friends, shout out to Adrian Viesca, says is that every time UNLV hosts a political event, they'll go through a huge rebranding just to make sure that the campus is more PC, right? Mm-hmm. So before one of those huge events, because they usually have like the Democratic debates or the presidential debates at UNLV now. So they...
And you know the university pays?
Yeah, because it's great advertising for them.
They pay a lot of money.
Yeah, because now people want to come to UNLV because they saw it on TV, because that's where the fuck our nation is. People pay attention to that. They're like, oh, UNLV, I didn't even know there was a school there.
Yeah.
They took the gun off of that sculpture before one of those big events. So, I don't know, maybe before the next debate.
But you know why it may not happen? Because there's so much money invested on the name Rebels.
Yeah.
And universities.
Rebel Wilson. Oh, sorry.
And universities, before anything, they're a business now.
Yeah.
And we cannot forget that. So, yeah. I know that the universities invested in, maybe they're not as invested on the mascot, but they're invested on the name Rebels.
Yeah.
But that's something that us as a university, we're going to carry for a long, long time.
Well, I mean, I was just in New Mexico, and the one of the teams there, the baseball team, it used to be like a Spanish conquistador was their mascot.
Oh, UNM got rid of their...
And they got... Oh, UNM did, right? Mm-hmm. And so they got rid of that mascot. But you can still go to... And that's a monument. That store is a monument to white supremacy.
Oppression.
And oppression in New Mexico. There's still a store where they sell vintage merch with the old mascot on it.
Oh, yeah.
Because people don't want to let it go.
There was a whole committee.
Because it's a wolf now?
I don't remember. No, Los Lobos. Like, we've always been Los Lobos. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know, because I was thinking, I was walking one day and there was a big zeal on the street. Made out of metal. I'm like, how are they going to rebrand the whole entire school and get rid of all of that? That's going to cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why they won't do it. But there was a conquistador in the actual seal of the school, which is it's just crazy in New Mexico. But there was one more thing before we go on a break that I wanted to mention. It's the I wanted to talk about the monument of the, I don't know if we have time, of the El Árbol de la Noche Triste, because it's such an important thing. There is this tree in Mexico called El Árbol de la Noche Triste. Supposedly, when Cortés was defeated in the only battle that the Aztecs won against the Spanish in 1519. He left the city. He lost a lot of soldiers, and he went under this tree and he sat down and cried. That's what the story tells us.
Oh, white tears.
I did. Exactly. Uh-huh. It's a super sentimentalist story. I wrote a paper about it. But what I find out in my research is that the tears of Cortés are not present anywhere in the history of books before the end of the 18th century. And in the 18th century, you have this age of sentimentality of like, oh yeah, like you say, it's white tears. So then the writers of Mexican history starting to add that, instead of saying he rested in this town called Popotla, which is now part of the city.
Yeah.
He sat down and reflected on the death of all his soldiers, and then he cried. I learned that in school. You can look at the books, and there's still an image of Cortés con la, ¿cómo se dice? Con la mano recargado en la en la frente, and he's just looking down and crying. And there was a movement by the neighbors of the neighborhood of calling it that tree, the tree of the La Noche Feliz.
Yeah.
There was a committee, but I don't know what happened. That tree got burned in the 19th century. again, it was the face. It was all over the newspapers in the 19th century. And they said that it was a murder to the history of Mexico, blah, blah, blah. But now there's still a battle. I don't know exactly what happened with the trip because it's such an iconic image. One of the stops of the metro is El Metro Popotla, and it's a little tree. So the legacy...
The tree's still there, right? There's a big gate around it.
Part of the tree still there, yeah. But it's still celebrated. But it's one of those weird instances. But when it comes to the conquest, Mexico doesn't celebrate it as much as other places. But that is one instance where the conquest is still, it's still like romanticized as this thing. When I was talking about that vandalism that occurred in one of the statues of Cortes, the ambassador, the Mexican ambassador in Spain, said that that the conquest was the proud and it brought the proud and free civilization that we Mexicans are. We are the result of a universal epic, and therefore the defacement of the statue should be condemned and blah blah blah. So, and this happened only a couple of years ago, and I put one of the articles on our website. But it's something that we still deal with. It we see it locally, we see it nationally, and we see it internationally. It's something that affects us. And with that in mind, I just art matters, man. People always sometimes they don't take us seriously for what we do as artists, as art historians. But then this sort of event happens and reminds us that art is important. And thinking and making sense and writing about and making art, it's something that is part of who we are as humans.
I mean, people are going to look back at this time in history and look at art, look at what artists are doing as the documentation of what's really going on. Because that's what art historians have been doing from day one. Is like they're not just looking at the front of the image. They're not just looking at the figures in the image. Art historians are looking in the background and they're trying to figure out what the artists were really saying at the time, because sometimes art is more accurate than written history, because who wrote those histories, right?
Correct.
And so, you know, artists, a lot of artists who worked for a lot of rich families, you know, some of them were subversive in what they painted, you know, in those paintings of the families or of whatever event they were paid by the government to paint.
Yeah, it's not just a portrait.
It's not just a portrait.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be very interesting to look back on these times.
Absolutely. And always keep in mind that when you look at a piece of art, when you look at a monument, it's a series of silences where like we know a little bit about what happened, and then somebody wrote about that event, but they wrote it on one-sided or somebody paid them to write that. So when you see the chain of how history was created, it's nothing but a series of silences.
Yeah.
And the result are those monuments that at the end of the day, they don't have the value that we think they have. Absolutely not.
And all I want to know is, where is Kendall Jenner with her Pepsi? This is when we need it. ¿Dónde está?
No, ahí andaba con su tiki torch.
I know. Shit. Okay. Well, that was fun.
Kendall, se me perdió la Pepsi.
All right. So let's take a little break. Mm-hmm. And then when we come back, we'll have some recommendations or...
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Hey, Fabi.
What's happening?
You know how there's so much going on right now everywhere?
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, of course.
So I really don't think we should be adding sexual and reproductive health to your, you know, to your care list right now. But guess what, Mimi? Planned Parenthood is here for you to ease your mind and give you the care you need with Planned Parenthood telehealth services.
And you know what? Planned Parenthood has been there for me in the past, and they're here for you too, wherever you are. Because they know care can't wait. Not now, not ever. Their telehealth services provide birth control information and care, STI testing and treatment, emergency contraception, and more.
Get care, ease your mind, and save a trip. Planned Parenthood telehealth makes it easy to reach an expert in your area by phone or video.
Set up a telehealth appointment with a Planned Parenthood medical professional by phone or video today. Go to plannedparenthood.org/telehealth. The website, once again, is plannedparenthood.org/telehealth. I could have said contraception. Oh my God. Okay, wait. That's plannedparenthood.org/telehealth.
Así o más sencillo.
And we're back.
Do you have recommendations?
I thought I did and I just forgot. That's not good. Carmen, se me olvidó mi recomendación.
A mí también, pero
a ver. Oh my God, I had such a good one. Do you have any recommendations, Babelito?
Tengo tantas recomendaciones.
Okay, get into it.
Just one really quick. There is an article by The Root, and I'm going to post it online, that actually celebrates the opposite.
You sounded so Chicano. I found an article by The Root.
Pues y qué?
That's awesome. No, I'm just celebrating you. I'm celebrating you.
It's called, it's about all the monuments around the world that celebrate those people that fought against slavery. So I thought I will add a little bit of good things in the world to this discussion towards the end. There is an incredible website that this scholar that studies visual culture, which I use his text from some of my classes, and he put together a website, and I tried to get into that group, and I might be able to add to this website. It's called All Monuments Must Fall, a syllabus. Ooh. And it's an incredible, incredible syllabus that you can download as a PDF, and it tells you all kinds. I'm going to say there's over 100 or even more, maybe over 200 different texts, videos, articles, movies that deal with monuments, people that have studied those monuments in different parts of the world. What do they mean? And everything is separated by categories. It's a beautiful thing. So if you're interested in learning more about the importance of monuments and the importance of the people that study monuments,
right?
Historians, anthropologists, sociologists, everything, this is a good website. It's allmonumentsmustfall.ghost.io, and I will put the link in the website because it's has all this punctuation. And one more thing,
Dale.
There is an incredible video by one anthropologist and one visual culture person. It's by WJT Mitchell and Michael Tosig, and it's a discussion in contemporary culture about monuments. And this is a video that DIA Art Foundation put together.
Uh-huh.
The video is like 2 hours long, I know. It's a little academic, but it's entertainment. It's very entertaining.
So just if you've never been to an art talk before,
mm-hmm.
it's just like going to a movie. Like the first 20 minutes is just bullshit. So if you just fast forward like to the first couple people that you see on the video,
yes,
it's just them like giving you like thanking everybody.
Gracias
in the
a tu organización.
Room,
blah, 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 y esta la otra, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
But when you get to it, it's a conversation between WJT Mitchell and Michael Tosig, and it's super interesting because they really break it down. What is a monument? What is the difference between a monument and a painting? What does it mean? How does it represent memory and history? Fascinating stuff. All of those links, please go to our website. They're going to be there.
Well, you know what's really fucked up, though?
Yes.
That I was thinking about after watching that video is, okay, so I'm just going to, like, start talking, and I don't know if I'm going to make any sense.
Okay.
But, okay, the fact that those two white dudes are experts on monuments or whatever, and they're talking about it, and they're putting things into context and how important certain art historical moments and defining what a monument is.
Yeah.
It's giving the monument more power, right? And then also us talking about it on this podcast, we're giving these monuments more power, right? So like you said, in order for a monument to have power, it must be defaced a lot of the times, and they must come down for people to realize the power that that monument had.
Correct.
So in essence, we are part of a structure that are making monuments for white supremacy even stronger by talking about them.
But I think you're right, but also...
Because monuments must come down for the ones that remain for us to remember the power that those monuments have.
Yes. But somebody has to highlight the power that they hold and how that power must be toppled. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
toppled. Uh huh.
We're part of the system, man, and there's nothing we can do about it.
No, but I'm just like, I mean, of course we need to talk about it.
When you go to the bathroom, did you smoke a joint and you're like, no, whoa, man.
No, I had some. No, I'm not gonna. I was gonna make a joke, but it's about poppers, and that's in a future episode.
That's a future episode.
Sneak peek of a future episode. But I don't know. I keep thinking about that because it also is this feeling that I get of like being helpless. Of like, yeah, we're talking about this on this episode, but what's really going to happen? Most people don't even care about what's going on, to be honest. Mm-hmm. How many people showed up to vote? You know what I mean? They don't care about monuments. And I feel like we're from Las Vegas. So to us, taking down a monument is kind of no big thing because everything, the architecture here implodes every other day.
And that's another part of about monuments. They're going to come down sooner or later.
Yeah.
But so... What I find tiring is that how some people's career, including mine, are built on the premise of changing or highlighting these power structures and trying to change them. So it's just we're trying to undo fucking stupid shit that people did starting thousands of years ago.
And I can sit here and like be critical and blah 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 blah, but like guada guada la cuchara, but hello, like I'm exhibiting in museums, like what I'm also in part
but
of,
but you're
that.
Aware of it, and like most artists are not aware of it. Okay. And being aware of it, it's one
That's
step
true.
And you're gaining power, and if you do things the way you should do it, and you're gonna go into those systems and exploding from the inside out.
Okay.
And that's important to keep in mind. That's important for everybody that is listening to our episode. Again, La Jury lo dijo. Like, we have to compromise sometimes. We have to sacrifice a lot of things. And sometimes we have to work twice as hard. But if we have una pata dentro del sistema, like, let's act on it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're just going to be two dudes complaining and nothing's going to happen.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Leave your foot in there and do the quebradita.
Me mete y saca.
Saca y mete.
Okay. Anyway, your turn.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I want to recommend a podcast today, and it's a new one by Culture Strike, actually.
Yeah.
It's called La Hora de los Chismosos or Chismosas. La Hora del. That's what it's called. With Jesus and Layel. And it's a weekly podcast, and it's one of those really great ones that goes over
topical.
What happened that week, and they get into it.
Into it.
I've recommended a couple other ones in the past, like Caught Up, which is cool. They're in DC, and it's two dudes. One of them calls himself the Haitian Sensation, and the other one's Puerto Rican. I don't remember the rhyme, but and they're really good when it comes to topical situations.
Yes,
there's also The Read,
De Colores,
and De Colores. Mm-hmm. They come out every week and talk about what happened based on that week. And as Pablito mentioned, I put together a little slideshow of podcast that I listened to right after the terrorist attacks in Charlottesville, mm-hmm. the terrorist attack in Charlottesville. Podcasts like Café con Chisme, podcasts like Another Round, In the Thick, Bearded Fruit. They did a lot of episodes. There's a lot of episodes out there about white supremacy.
About
Pod Save America. Mm-hmm. If you want to know, there's a lot of resources out there.
Not Latino USA, but In the Thick.
In the Thick.
There is an episode about the history of white supremacy in the government. Mm-hmm. It's amazing, amazing stuff. But I just wanted to end with one note.
Okay.
I know that we keep taking care of ourselves. We keep holding each other's hands. Because these are difficult times, and that's important to take care of yourself. But also, this is it. Like it's time to fight. Like, I'm not saying go out and destroy the system, because we cannot do that. But if you have to keep having those conversations with people.
Yeah.
Keep talking about it. Be loud. And this is one of the reasons why I want to stay in the university system, because that's the thing that I can contribute to the world, right? To
yeah.
talk to my students about some of these issues in a historical and art historical sense. So yes, love each other, duh, like obviously, but really, like, this is it, man. Like, let's keep going.
Truly. Honestly, yes. Truly.
yeah.
All right. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay. Well, you can find us at latinoswholunch.com. Listen to us on the internet. You know where we are. Google it, locas. And if you're on the internet, you might as well go on to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and rate us 5 stars.
5 estrellas solamente.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visibility we have. And visibility is?
Like fall monuments, essential.
All right. I'm Fabi Fab.
And this is Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao.
You want to practice it a couple times before we do it? Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's got to be perfect, girl. It's got to be perfect.
Okay. ¿Dónde está? Okay, here we go. Oh, nope. Some pictures. Okay. Ready?
Wait.
Do you want to do the whole intro?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Fabi Fab.
And this is Babelito.
And we are Latinos Who Lunch, the podcast where we talk about important things like
my daddy, Pennsylvania, mama from Pennsylvania. You mix that pencil with the vania. I'm from Pennsylvania.
That's good. Damn, that was on the first try, bitch.
Watch what you...
We're going to fuck it up.
Yes.